Today's program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
On behalf of our family of hosts, staff, and the millions of listeners who have tuned in since 2009, we want to wish you happy holidays and ask for your support as we launch our daily in-house news coverage. Please consider making us a part of your end-of-year giving in 2013. Your membership donation is tax deductible and the best way to show you believe in our work and the importance of a free, food-focused media resource. Consider donating today at heritageradionetwork.org by clicking the donate button. Thanks for your support and enjoy the show.
In a Bloomberg study of healthcare efficiency, the United States ranked 46th out of 48 countries. Healthcare accounts for 17.2% of GDP in the U.S. In Hong Kong, the country with the second most efficient system, it's 3.8%. The World Health Organization ranks the U.S. healthcare system 37th in the world. According to the National Institutes of Health, of 17 high-income countries, the United States had the highest or near-highest prevalence of infant mortality, heart and lung disease, sexually transmitted infections, adolescent pregnancies, injuries, homicides, and disability. The Commonwealth Fund ranked the United States last in quality and first in cost of healthcare among similar countries. Our system is beaten by the expected suspects, such as Canada, the UK, and Switzerland, but there are also some surprises. Oman ranks ahead of the U.S., as do Malta, Andorra, and San Marino, two of which I didn't even know were countries. What's wrong with the American healthcare system? Let's discuss. This is How to Behave, the All I Want for Christmas is Universal Healthcare show. Back on my right, after 2 weeks on the phone, Hannah Howard.
I exist in real life.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Yeah. Sorry, you have a little bit of a throat thing?
I got a little cough going on, but I'm all lozenged up and ready.
You should be all hot toddied up like I am.
Yeah, I'm jealous.
Yeah, you should be. Joining us on the phone today, I'm thrilled to have the chairman of the Committee on Health in the New York State Assembly, Assemblymember Richard Gottfried. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be with you.
So first and most important, should we be calling you Assemblyman or Assemblymember, Gottfried?
Oh, I think Assemblymember is a more official and accurate title, but it's got one more syllable, so whatever works for you.
It's a slog. And on the New York State website, it's one word, but Assemblymember is not a word.
Well, actually, you know, in the New York City Charter, members of the council, their official title is council member, one word.
Really?
In the New York State Constitution, we're just called member or member of the assembly. So
okay.
if you want to turn that around, assembly member, two words, is the most constitutionally and appropriately correct way to say it.
Okay, good. I'm glad we clarified that.
Yeah.
It's cumbersome, but it kind of sounds awesome. So there we have it.
Yeah, the longer the title, the more important, right?
Yeah, just don't call me late for dinner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we are talking today, and I want some clarification from you, about universal health care and or single-payer health care.
Yes.
What is the difference?
Well, universal healthcare would mean a system that guarantees that everybody has health coverage, and there are countries that do that using insurance companies. Single payer means that everybody has health coverage, and we don't have insurance companies, just like we don't have insurance companies sending the fire engines out or sending the police out or sending school teachers out to our public schools. The state would be paying bills. Healthcare providers that you choose would be providing the care.
Okay, cool. So you have introduced legislation to create a universal healthcare in New York State. Is that correct?
Using a state single-payer system.
So you're right. Going after both?
Correct.
All right. So what can you tell us about your plan for New York State?
Well, you know, almost every problem that we face in health and healthcare in New York, whether it's as patients or healthcare providers or employers or taxpayers is made worse and harder to solve because we have a system rooted in insurance companies. And almost every complaint that people have about the Affordable Care Act is rooted in the fact that it leaves in place a system dominated by insurance companies. We don't need them, and we really can't tolerate them. You know, we can have an efficient system that fairly pays healthcare providers and provides complete coverage for every New Yorker, but we can really only do that if we stop paying insurance companies the 10, 20, or 30% overhead that we pay them, and stop having them being in charge of what doctor we can see or what that doctor can provide or what that doctor will get paid.
And how long have you been trying to make this happen? This is not something new this year, is it?
It's not. I've been carrying this bill for just over 20 years. This is not a topic for the faint of heart. You know, Harry Truman wanted to set up a single-payer system. Franklin D. Roosevelt, up until a day or two before he sent the Social Security bill to Congress, wanted to have it cover health care as well. Even Al Smith, when he was in the New York State Assembly in 1915, had a universal health coverage bill. You know, when you're fighting against the insurance industry, it's not easy.
Why do you think, not just that, I understand the insurance industry has a lot of money and they spend it on lobbyists and advertising and so on, but why do you think the American public is so reluctant to embrace this idea?
Well, you know, at almost any given point, if you ask the American people whether they would be willing to pay higher taxes for universal health coverage, 65-70% or more say yes most of the time.
Really?
The irony, of course, is that real universal health coverage in a single-payer system would cost us dramatically less than we now spend for premiums and deductibles and co-pays and whatnot. You know, unfortunately, so many people, when they talk about this topic, people who know healthcare very well and know health policy very well, will say, "Oh, well, everyone knows single payer makes the most sense, but it's not politically practical." And when it's dismissed like that, it tends not to get talked about anywhere near as much as it should be. If all the people who agree that a single payer system is the only sensible way to go were to stand up and say that in public all together, you'd have a real tidal wave of support. I think the Affordable Care Act, because it has gone about as far as you can go to cure some of the problems in the insurance-based system, and because there are still so many problems obvious even after the Affordable Care Act is passed, I think a lot of people are beginning to say, you know, we really can do better and have to do better than the insurance-based system will let us do. And so I think the Affordable Care Act, for all the good that it has done, and it's done a lot of good, is making it clear that we, to a lot more people, that we really now do need to go to a single-payer system.
So, yeah, that was one of my questions, is do you think that the Affordable Care Act is a step forward and closer to that goal, or is it a step in the wrong direction? But it sounds like you think it's a step in the wrong direction, and therefore that's good for getting us toward the ultimate goal of single-payer?
You know, it's a step in the right direction in that it is making the insurance-based system less of a problem. But
it sure doesn't feel like that right now. I own a small business, and I'm trying to sort through healthcare for my staff, and it is so much more complicated and more expensive with fewer options. I'm a huge supporter of the Affordable Care Act, but this week I'm feeling the bite of what everybody's complaining about.
If as a small business owner you're finding coverage that is less expensive than is now being offered on the exchange, my guess is that you're buying a product that is pretty bare bones. Because in almost every case, at least in New York State, the policies being offered on the exchange are dramatically less expensive than comparable coverage in the marketplace.
Well, for individuals, you mean?
For individuals, yeah.
Yeah, that's not necessarily the case for businesses.
Well, again, I would say that maybe because what you've been buying is a pretty sparse product, and you may be paying less for it, but you're probably not getting your money's worth. And also, in New York, about 15 and 20 years ago, we passed a lot of the market reforms that, for small group coverage, that the Affordable Care Act is now making nationwide, like dealing with pre-existing conditions and requiring community rating. And so some of the benefits of the Affordable Care Act for small group products have already been factored into the New York system years ago. So for small group coverage, the price may not be coming down as much.
So one of the questions I have is about businesses. It seems that in the nation, corporations and business groups are very much against healthcare reform, and especially against the sort of thing you're talking about, universal, mm-hmm. single payer. And I don't understand that. As a business owner, nothing would thrill me more than taking healthcare off my list of things I had to deal with.
Yep.
Well, I don't understand why McDonald's and IBM and General Motors want to dedicate whole departments of their business to managing health plans. Why wouldn't they be thrilled to just let somebody else take it over?
That's a really good question, and I've been wondering about that for a couple of decades, and you know, not everything makes sense in life, and I think for the business community, the notion of a public program paid by taxes rather than the outrageous premiums they're paying to insurance companies is ideologically something that they just can't get their arms around.
They just can't handle the word taxes?
And the word government.
Yeah.
But I think it's pretty clear that for almost every employer, what they would be paying in taxes would be substantially less than what they're now spending on health benefits for their workers.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it seems to me like almost everybody would benefit besides the insurance companies. And as big and powerful as they are, if it's insurance companies against the rest of humanity, you know, there's more people who are not, or more dollars that are not insurance company dollars. So, right, I think it's the strange concept of people like not wanting what is clearly better for them personally in a very real way.
Not the only issue in politics today where people are voting against their own self-interest.
I don't understand, though. Is it really like, are people really dumb, or are they really misinformed, or are they really confused, or I don't get it.
Some combination.
I think the problem is that in this country, there are some very deeply rooted ideological prejudices against the public sector, unless we're talking about the people with badges and guns. And there, you don't hear both sides of an awful lot of stories in the news media, and this is one of them. I mean, I don't know the last time I heard a sensible discussion back and forth about this topic in the mainstream media. Almost never. I mean, unless you're watching Bill Moyers on public television, it's hard to find an intelligent discussion of this topic. And it's no surprise, in view of that, that there is so much resistance. I think the the response to the Affordable Care Act, where people, you know, expected that a lot of, well, many people expected that that it would solve a lot more problems than it has. I think the backlash to it gives us a real opportunity to make the case that that the real problem here is a system rooted in health insurance companies, and that an awful lot of the world has figured out that not only can you do without them, but do dramatically better without them, spending a lot less money and getting much better results.
All right. Well, we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Dr. Ollie Fine of the Physicians for a National Health Program, and we're going to be about 2 minutes closer to getting rid of the insurance companies.
Woo-hoo.
This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network.
You are listening to Dirty Hands by EULA on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Government.
We're back. This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network. Dr. Ollie Fine, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
So glad to have you joining us.
Well, thanks so much. I'm glad to be here.
I was at my first Physicians for a National Health Program meeting last week. It was an interesting and fun experience.
Brian knows how to have a good time.
You guys can party. Chinese food and bottles of wine. It was a good group.
Yes, it was a very exciting meeting, I thought.
Yeah. Your meeting, and I don't want to sound too negative, but it reminded me a little bit about what we were just talking about with Assemblyman Gottfried, of how hard it is to get this message to have traction. It's a small and very passionate group of people who are very well informed and working really, really hard, and I'm baffled that this movement hasn't become bigger. Do you have any thoughts on why that is?
Well, you know, I think the problem frequently is that, you know, patients, that is to say the people, aren't confronted with the problem until, in fact, they get ill. And so, and illness is a time at which they cannot be as, you know, vocal advocates for something. They really need to take care of themselves. So I do think that many people don't have a sense of what the problem is because they don't confront it in a meaningful way in their daily lives.
Yeah. I, like so many people, I got an email this week, but I get them probably once a year, of somebody saying, my cousin, my neighbor's child, whoever, got a brain tumor and doesn't have health insurance, and we're doing a fundraiser for them. And I always feel like everybody knows somebody in that situation at some point. Isn't that
right,
the
everyone
moment?
Everyone knows someone who's sick, even if they themselves are not sick.
Yeah, that's the moment where I say, we don't have to have this problem. We shouldn't be having bake sales to raise money for somebody who's got a brain tumor.
Right. There's something inherently messed up in that.
Vermont is a little bit ahead of New York in this process. Is that true, Assemblyman?
More than a little bit. In 2011, Governor Shumlin, the then new governor of Vermont and a very strong progressive Democrat, enacted legislation to have the state develop a single-payer system and submit it to the federal government for a waiver under the Affordable Care Act in 2017. So they're ahead of us in time, although my single-payer bill is a pretty much fully fleshed-out proposal rather than a bill to tell the state to develop a proposal.
And how optimistic are you that your bill will become law during our lifetimes?
Well, my goal right now is to get it to the floor of the Assembly for a vote this year. On the one hand, I'm pretty realistic. This is an uphill fight, to say the least. On the other hand, I've had a fair number of bills in my career that were around for a long time before they finally became law. And I think the realization that people are coming to with the Affordable Care Act rollout is, I think, going to give the single-payer issue a really big boost.
Yeah, I hope so. Dr. Fine, somebody at the meeting brought up some questions about whether the Vermont plan was actually a good step toward single-payer. Do you have any thoughts on the strengths and weaknesses of the Vermont plan?
Well, I think that it is important as a statement, that in fact there is a community that wants to move in the direction of single-payer, just no question about it. There will have to be a number of waivers and things that allow Vermont to literally combine, private insurance with Medicare, with Medicaid, perhaps even with the VA. And so the obstacles are not insubstantial in the process, but it seems to me it is, in fact, a important step for a single state to actually move in this direction. Because I think once people see that it works, and it will, then I think other states are going to fall in line.
Assemblyman Godfrey, do you have any numbers on what you think this is going to cost New Yorkers, what the taxes will be, how it will increase or lower overall healthcare costs, stuff like that?
Well, of the probably in the ballpark of $100 billion that New Yorkers now spend on health coverage and healthcare, it's probably by now a little more than that.
Does that include Medicare and Medicaid? And
yeah.
Okay.
The state commissioned a study 4 years ago of several approaches to universal coverage, and found that adopting a single-payer system would squeeze probably about $10 or $20 billion out of that roughly $100 billion that we were spending about 4 years ago. And so you would have a very dramatic reduction in the total that New Yorkers would be spending on health care. And where that comes from primarily is by eliminating administrative costs and overhead and profit in insurance companies and in the spending that doctors and hospitals and others have to spend on the paperwork of dealing with insurance companies.
Yeah.
Now, it would be the money we spend would be called a tax rather than being called premiums, deductibles, copayments, and taxes. And so when you say tax to people, people break out in hives. But if people focus on whether what they'd be spending out of pocket is more or less, they're going to find that it's dramatically less.
And it's certainly less when you combine what people pay in premiums and what they pay in taxes now that ends up going to programs that are in one way or another paying.
And, you know, about two-thirds of what we spend on health care in this country today is taxpayer dollars. Some of it is direct dollars spent on Medicaid and Medicare, and some of it is taxpayer dollars that are lost because we give employers a tax credit or a tax deduction for what they spend on health insurance premiums for their workers. So we're almost two-thirds taxpayer-funded.
We're two-thirds of the way there.
Right,
and look at the bright side.
Aren't Medicare and Medicaid recipients very happy, usually, with their health care compared with those who are using the regular insurance stuff?
Well, I think that's true. That is certainly true in Medicare, where, you know, Medicare today is and has always been one of the, by far, most popular programs in the country, and a lot more doctors accept Medicare as payment than accept private health insurance. You know, my family doctor does not accept any insurance except Medicare. And if you ask him why, he'll say, because while I don't think Medicare pays me enough, when I send in a bill, they send me a check. And when I, with private insurance, when I send in a bill, they give me an argument.
That's why we in Physicians for National Health Program talk about Medicare for All, frankly.
Right, it's a model.
Improved, yeah, improved and expanded, you know, as a way of trying to make this a frame that people will understand is, you know, a really improved way of paying for care.
Right, but of course a lot of people who are opponents of this would say, if it's just rubber stamping yes to everything, then that's just inviting fraud and abuse.
Well,
it's not
except
a
if
rubber stamping everything.
I mean, I'm sure the answer is they don't say yes to everything. But I mean, if doctors know that Medicaid and Medicare are going to pay whatever they submit, the shifty ones are going to submit things that aren't legitimate, right?
Well, but Medicare is the program that is, in fact, exploring ways to, deal with the fee-for-service system, more directly, frankly.
Yeah, that's a topic.
Any private insurer.
Yeah, that's a big topic to tackle the fee-for-services issue and how to change that. All right, we've got just
And by the way, historically, Medicare is a much lower cost and much more efficient program than private health insurance.
Yeah.
And around the world, America's system based on insurance companies is the most expensive and wasteful and just about the least effective on the planet.
Yeah,
and industrial countries.
And in both cost and effectiveness, it's bad by a wide margin.
Yep. Like,
it is so much more expensive than the next closest countries. It's just unbelievable to me that people in this country can look at the statistics of our system versus the rest of the world and defend our system at all. It's clear that something needs to change. All right, well, that's all the time we have, sadly. I have a whole bunch of questions for the universal healthcare quiz that we don't have time for today.
Oh, dear. But, well, invite us back.
I will have to invite you back. You actually, Assemblyman, you covered a lot of the questions I had for the quiz already, so I felt like you were gonna win in a landslide because you obviously know your statistics.
Well, thank you.
But thank you very much for all the work you're doing in the effort to make this happen and for your stick-to-itiveness. It is very impressive that you are fighting this battle year after year, but civil rights didn't happen in a day. Gay marriage didn't happen in a day. So let's hope that we can add universal health care in at least New York State to that list of long battles that eventually get won.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you very much to Assemblymember Richard Gottfried and to Dr. Ollie Fine of the Physicians for a National Health Program for being on the show today. Thanks to the woman who keeps her administrative costs well below 20%.
At all times.
Hannah Howard. The How to Behave theme is courtesy of John Lundbaum and Big Five Chord. Check them out at BigFiveChord.com. Thanks to Joe Galarraga for engineering today's show. You can always find episodes of How to Behave and lots of other great shows at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm Brian Kaiser. And remember, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. This is How to Behave on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.